Welcome to Miracles Happen 2010. This is the Relationships Workshop. The format of this meeting is, or workshop, is 60 minutes. It says that I'll share for 30 minutes. I don't necessarily know that that'll happen. And then it'll be followed by group discussion, basically. So again, my name is Ken Azzotto, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to thank Richard and the rest of the committee for allowing me to come in and speak at the convention. It's always an honor and a privilege to show up for Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't been at this convention in several years, and I love the outside. I just the place, the setting, the driving in today, you know, it was really cool. I always think about this speaker I heard at AALA years ago, and she said, you know, there's a mountain out there. You know, and she goes on to talk about her God and, you know, how her God is the person who can raise the sun without her out there to supervise, you know, and take a tomato seed and turn it into a tomato, you know, and that's kind of the higher power that I've found since I've been sober. And it was really the one that I had before I got sober. So, you know, I always try and take a minute when I know I'm going to be in this situation, sitting here looking at an empty first row, because everybody's afraid to come up at the front. and then I understand those boundaries that we need those little things, though. It's telltale signs of worrisome, and that's the relationships and how we guard ourselves back, you know, regardless of, you know, I mean, a little bit about me, you know, I was raised in foster care. I had a lesbian mother who was, you know, my brother told me when I was 17 years old, the sooner you can face that your dad's a heroin addict and your mother's a prostitute, the better you'll be. And, you know, I don't do that for shock value. I do it for kind of demographic value, you know. We had the yard. We didn't have the money to put the car up on the blocks in the yard. You know, we had the grocery carts tipped over in the yard. We had the broken front window. So coping skills and mechanisms of relationships and the emotional stuff wasn't something that I was raised with. I don't know. You know, I was good though. I mean, I thought I was pretty good. Because I always knew deep down that I cared about the people that I said I cared about. I just didn't know how to show it properly. You know, as we grow to be men, you know, there's many times in my life that I was still thinking of myself as that little boy, but my physique was bigger, and I would come up on people, especially being raised by lesbians, you know, and then coming out of the closet, going to gay bars, and I was, you know, I was always the little boy that was the lesbian couple's son, so I would come up on lesbians in the bar like that, and they'd be like, whoa, dude, chill, you know, because I'm a 6'3" guy, and, you know, I'm not that little boy, so that was a lesson that I had, was hard to learn, you know, and when they asked me to talk about relationships, I guess the reason is I'm in a successful relationship. My husband and I have been together for 16 years. With a lesbian couple, we have two beautiful daughters, 9 and 6. And it's not anywhere near what I thought it would be. You know, I never thought that that's the type of life that I would attain. It was, you know, when I came out of the closet in Palm Springs and I was going to CC Construction, I was going to Daddy Warbucks and doing those things, we didn't think about marriage. We didn't think about medical benefits. We didn't think about, we thought, where's my next boyfriend? You know, and then, boy, oh boy, what a rage that was. You know, my first few relationships, I was the abuser. Because I was just so afraid that they were going to leave. And, you know, that was not a comfortable place to be. I thought that I was destined to be in that, you know, place. You know, I thought we all had our rungs on the ladder in life. and that was just mine, you know, and that's really sad. When I think about being a rung on a ladder and have being stepped on, it was, you know, one of those things that the steps really set me free of is, you know, carrying the world on my back. You know, it was not something that is healthy. So, you know, the way that I don't keep my relationship together, okay? There's no wisdom. What happened for me is that I found sobriety. I stayed sober. They told me not to get into a relationship for the first year, and I took it a little bit further because when I have sex, I look for love. I equate sex with love. So I didn't have any sexual encounters for my first 6 months of sobriety. I didn't seek it. I just, you know, it's like the More About Alcoholism talks about, you know, I swore off forever without a solemn oath, only it wasn't forever. It was just 6 months. And I was watching the clock the whole time, you know. So that was kind of cool. Then around about, you know, coming up on my first year, I had dated a couple of guys in the program, but, you know, it was just, you know, oh, I'm going to go date this person or what have you, you know. And then my husband and I used to use together. And when I was about 3 or 4 months into the program, I ran into him in a meeting and helped him with his new, you know, get a ride, do this, whatever. You know, he went into a program. And, you know, I oogled over him when we were getting loaded, and he wouldn't give me the time of day. And, you know, finally I was coming up on my year, and we were leaving a Thursday night meeting in Orange County, and I, you know, giving the traditional hug, you know, and I said, are you ever going to go out with me or what? For those of you that know me, I can be brazen. And he's like, yeah, we could try that. The bottom line was we were both going to get laid. You know, that was what was in our head. It wasn't about, you know, I'm going to find this, I'm going to find that. You know, are you ever going to go out with me? Finally, I'm going to get me some of that. Okay? But what happened was, you know, is I have a sponsor. And I have friends that I hadn't slept with yet. And I can't tell you that before, you know, before, yeah, I heard the yet too. I feel like that's a Freudian slip, but that's beside the point. Because I, you know, going back to my drinking and my using days, and you know, I was a disc jockey in a popular bar, and, you know, I can't tell you how many times I stood at the bar and I looked around at the people that I was hanging with, and it was either I had already slept with them, I knew at least they wanted to sleep with me really bad, or I wanted to sleep with them really bad, and it was bound to happen. You know, those three criteria had to be met in order for me to pay attention to you in my 20s. You know, but when I came into the program and I did that, you know, commitment to no sexual relations and no relationships, what I found was I built friendships. You know, I built friendships based on a level of intimacy that I had never known. You know, men on men, and actually sharing what it's like to be a gay man, you know, and just talking about what does that mean? You know, what does it mean to be a man? I didn't know. I was such a little boy when I got to this program. And so it brought me to a place of being capable of having a relationship. We didn't move in right away together. We waited 6 weeks. But what had ended up happening, kind of the long and the short of it is, was that he was getting out of the treatment center. He had to find a place. I didn't seek much sponsor direction. It came to be that the only place he had to stay was out with his mother in San Bernardino. That lasted 24 hours. And his mother, I got a friend of mine to commit to letting him stay for 30 days. While he found a job, and I had an apartment lined up, but I couldn't afford it, you know, this, that, and the other. So we moved in together, you know. But I maintained throughout that for me, working with my sponsor, going to my meetings. You know, there oftentimes that when newcomers come in and they're in a relationship, I have, you know, we all have friends that push sponsees their way or your way or what have you. You know, oh, you he can help you because he has this in common with you or that in common with you. So it's the sitting with each other at meetings. It's the going to separate meetings or going to the same meetings. What do we do? How do we do this? How do we make this happen? You know, and it really came for me, it came to down to when I'm laying in bed at night. Here I was a year sober, and I was used to praying when I woke up. I was used to praying when I went to sleep. I wasn't used to praying with somebody there. And so what I found was I got to define my relationship with God one step further, you know, and I found that it's okay. And I was so rigid about it. I can't be touching him, you know, and it was just this whole boundary thing, you know, that it really, I mean, my God, I don't have boundaries. You know, it's cool. If I'm driving down the road and I want to have a conversation, boom, it's there. You know, the trick is not so much talking to God, because as you know, there's a lot of people in the room that know me. I don't have a problem talking. It's listening that I have a problem doing. And it takes some time. It takes some energy. It takes some effort. And, you know, as many times as I've been felt so spiritually fit in this program, you know, I could probably count on one hand in the 17 years I've been sober. The amount of times that I felt unworthy in this program are infinite, you know, but I don't drink, I don't use, I don't react because, you know, my head will tell me, I wish we had a pedometer. I wish I had a pedometer for how much traveling I did while sitting in a meeting. Think about how many places you've gone just since you've been sitting here trying to listen to me. You know, some of you have been around the world and back. You know, it's amazing. You know, it's and the big book talks about it. The big book, we are like men who are bodily and mentally different from our fellows. You know, and that's what I remind myself of. I am bodily and mentally different from my fellows. I don't necessarily think drink, get drunk. You know, I think drink, get laid. You know, or other, you know, I'm an alcoholic who switched from scotch to speed because alcohol just never took me far enough away. And so there was a lot more longer days in my drinking and using, to say the least. But relationships are not just about the man that I share my life with. Relationships are about the relationship that I have with the mothers of my children. The relationships are about the relationship I have with my sponsor and how it's evolved over time. The relationship I have with my employer, my staff, my sponsees. You know, the relationship really comes down to who am I as a person. And I've kind of had a mantra lately because I don't know whether I'm trying to make myself feel better or what, but it's don't listen to what I say so much as watch what I do, because I've got a mouth on me, and I joke a lot. But I will tell you that the serious nature of this program and the seriousness in which it changed my life is, you know, I could never replace it. I could never, you know, put a price on it. I had no idea what I was going to do with my life, how I was going to maintain anything, much less, you know, being able to look in the mirror. And that's something that I was able to do for the first time once I became sober, once I went into treatment, you know. And, you know, treatment is called rehab, but rehab, you know, in case you're wondering, usually is held at a place that is a mental facility. And again, we go bodily and mentally different from our fellows. Once we accept, once, you know, while I was in treatment, I accepted, I realized, I laughed about the fact that, you know, I'm in a mental facility. Because rehab, you know, the popular song, I'm going back to rehab, I'm not going to sing for you. I have a day job. But it's like a flippant, oh, I'm going to rehab. Oh, they've been to so many rehabs. It's a mental facility. There's, you know, paid psychiatric people because I am bodily mentally different from my fellow. And I learned about the disease of alcoholism, the disease of addiction. I didn't become a professional about it. I learned that I was afflicted with it and that there's a due diligence required in taking care of it by, you know, that comes down to a personal responsibility of me checking in with my sponsor and having that relationship, you know, and working those steps that are laid out, you know, for me and, you know, remembering it. There's times when I can't remember what I'm doing in 5 minutes. And I still talk to my sponsor 2, 3, 4 times a week. You know, I don't know how others do it without doing it, frankly. You know, I have people that I sponsor that, you know, where they have 10 years sobriety, you know, and I'll talk to them every few months and I'm okay, but I'm not there to take anybody's inventory. I'm not here to think about how what I think of what you do with your life, because I spent many years thinking about what you did with your life and comparing my life to it and always falling short. You know, and if I didn't fall short, if I felt superior, I felt, you know, what I did to you was terrible. You know, if I felt superior around somebody, you know, it was all about ridiculing and making them look bad, or, you know, making myself feel better or whatever, because whatever that dynamic, whatever that coping mechanism is, you know, it's just, it wasn't healthy. You know, it's a level playing field. I am a human in the human race. You know, I don't know where we're racing, but, you know, I always have thought that was funny because they call it the human race, and I don't know where we're racing, but if you just sit back in a mall somewhere or Disneyland, I had a sociology teacher who talked about going to Disneyland and people watching, you know, and anymore with smartphones and all that, watching people is amazing, you know. And even for me, I mean, driving down the road, I can't go 3 miles with going, did something happen, you know? Did somebody update their status? Did I get a text? Did I this? Did I that? You know, slowing down and enjoying the moment. There was a newcomer that went to the other workshop, but we were talking and he was complaining about the signal here. You know, it's like it makes us be in the present. It makes us be here and now. You know, and I hope to be that here and now. I'm not really sure where I'm going now. Obviously not here and now. the thing about it is just slowing down. You know, that's kind of where I'm going. It's slowing down and not freaking out about relationships and you know, what I think my husband is thinking, or what I think another that I'm, you know, having a conversation with is thinking or doing or plotting or what have you. You know, sometimes we're just communicating, and sometimes in communicating, it's trying to find that level of communication. If you follow my drift, I mean, it's talking until we can find that talking point. We, as I said, we've been together for 16 years. At 5 years together, it actually started about 3 years together. This is where some may leave the room or whatever, but the monogamy, okay, the monogamy of a relationship, being gay men, being gay women, being, you know, they have this thing in heterosexual society, you know, it's called religion. It's called swingers. It's called, I mean, there's all these different groups within this heterosexual society. Then we have this whole gay community that being raised by a lesbian couple, I've seen kind of evolve as well, you know, where my mother didn't live with her girlfriend. She lived with her sister. You know, they went into the back doors of bars, this, that, and the other, to where when I came out of the closet, we didn't necessarily go in the back doors of bars, but we weren't necessarily standing in Safeway or Vaughn's talking about where we were the night before. You know, and here we go, skip forward 20, 25 years, 30 years. and we're in the central Orange County in a hotel at a gay AA convention, and I didn't see anybody driving in, you know, with tinted windows to make sure that they weren't seen. You know, where we've come sociologically is amazing, but the leaps and bounds. And, you know, however, there's people who absolutely want that picket fence. Well, I have two kids, you know, neighborhood house, got that too. And there's parameters that are set on it that, you know, and I have a ring, I've had a ceremony, I've been married, you know, swearing forever that I am going to be with this man only for the rest of my life. That's not my case. And that's not his case. It wasn't without a lot of work. Around about 3 years, you know, I was getting ready for work one day. It wasn't anything odd, but it was something that was resounding in my head. And I got out of the shower, you know, getting ready for work, and I came out and I said, "Do you ever just want to get laid?" And he knew it wasn't like I had to go into detail or anything like that, but he knew and I knew that I wasn't talking about with him. And it wasn't as if I was saying he was unworthy or I was unworthy or anything along that lines. You know, it was a defining moment in our relationship, because we started to honestly address a sexual issue. I trusted him to be able to say that to him and trust that he wouldn't run. Okay? And we had a conversation. It doesn't mean that we had an open house that night and had some sort of stag party. You know, it doesn't mean that today that it's gotten so free that you know, we open up the doors and have some stag party. You know, what it means is that this man that I have fallen in love with, that I share my life with, I trust wholly and completely with who I am all the way. What are my thoughts? What are my desires? What are my secrets? If I have this man in the 12-step fellowship that I call sponsor, and I have these other men that I call in that call me sponsor, and I hold myself to a level of truth and a level of honesty like no other I've had before, then why, with my every waking moment that I wear a ring around my finger, wouldn't I trust this man with who I am? Wholly and completely. And it opened up a dialogue. You know, is it comfortable? You know, it's like I said, it's not. What it does is it changes to where you don't want it so much. Damn it. You know, I'm not out there trying to see if I can get away with something. You know, and again, like I said earlier, I equate sex with love. So there's still that. So I'm cautious. But then, you know, in getting and staying sober for me, what happened was that I ended up with a self-esteem that I'd never known, a confidence that I'd never known, an economic stature that I'd never known. And it made me a certain amount of attractive, if you will, to people that would never have given me attention before. And I liked it. And I wanted to find out more about it. You know, so again, I had this conversation. He had this conversation. When we were about 5 years together, that conversation came to a head. I had decided to find out a little bit more about my curiosity. And there was somebody at one of the meetings that I went to, and we started looking into what was happening between us, and it got in the way. And my husband's reaction to it was he grew a beard. And we owned a business together and all this stuff. And, you know, the long and the short of it is that, you know, for 48 hours or between 48 and 72 hours, we quote unquote broke up. I slept on the couch for a week. And there was a lot of heartbreak. You know, I was starting to feel that, what am I doing? And we were, you know, we were considering our options. And, you know, what came to me, you know, in talking with my friends and with my sponsor, and, you know, I found that, I'm going to digress a little bit, but, you know, I used the program as I had been taught. I went and I sat with people who were in long-term relationships and said, what do you do? What, you know, how is it like for you? You know, and there were people in long-term relationships that, you know, swear off forever. You know, they'll publicly announce, you know, monogamy, monogamy, monogamy. And yet when you have coffee with them one-on-one, they're like, yeah, but there was this one time. Or, and I'm not saying everybody, but I'm saying my experience is, you know, that there's, you know, when you sit with a couple and, you know, there's usually this one time, you know, or this time or what have you, you know, and how did we get through it was, you know, communication again, communication. And I can't remember for the life of me, I've been trying to remember for like 5 years, but there was basically three questions that, you know, Sal and I had sat down and talked about, you know, and it was really, it was something along the lines of, do I love you? Do you love me? Are we, is this worth working out? Do we like the way life is, you know, other than this one thing, you know? And it was literally sitting down 3-4 nights in a row, several hours, sitting, crying, talking, what have you, you know. And we, the resolve was, you know, that we do love each other. And you know, this is something that's worth kicking out, you know. And, you know, now it's 11, 12 years later, and, you know, I couldn't imagine my life any other way. Hell, you know, I mean, I just don't. I don't, you know. We have a really good pairing. I'm lucky because I'm one of those gay men that's male chauvinistic. He, you know, I don't mind doing things around the house, but he doesn't mind it more, you know, and I don't mind letting him, you know, I take care of the car. He takes care of the carpet, you know, he'll do the laundry all the way through. I'll put it in the washer, transfer it to the dryer and say, by the way, the laundry's in the dryer, you know, you know, not that I can't, not that I won't. I don't know. I'm spoiled. I am so spoiled. It's disgusting. But, you know, what I have is something that is non-judgmental, you know, and fun-loving and you know, serious and long-term. And it's just marriage. It's just marriage. There's no, you know, I mean, all this political rigmarole and religious rigmarole that goes on about society. I'm just like, you know, just step into my life for one day and you'll really see that I'm just another American. I'm just another person that's staying sober, that has a relationship, that, you know, has the phone ring with a sponsor, or some friend, and I either roll my eyes and answer the phone anyway, or call them back, you know, or, you know, hear you talk to them, you know. I really don't know what more I can say, but I do want to tell you also, because, I mean, I've talked about the relationship that I have with my husband, but, you know, something that... I don't know how. I really don't know how to segue into this, but I really want to tell you guys because it's just heart-wrenching, and it's happened in the past couple of days where I got a text from a sponsee that, you know, I started sponsoring New Year's Day like a year and a half ago, and he's really just had such a time getting sober, staying sober, you know, and I really don't even feel like I could call him a sponsee because he hasn't put any time together. But I know that when he contacts me, that's how he looks at me, if you will. It was 11 o'clock at night, and I just got this, "Hello, Ken." I was already asleep. I get up at 3:30 in the morning. And so it was my waking phone call, my waking text as I'm looking through my stuff in the morning, drinking my coffee. And but the text that followed, it was 11 o'clock at 1:07 a.m. I got this text, and it just brought home to me the true nature of this disease and what it must be like for anyone who goes out or has such a problem of knowing that the program is here and not knowing. Because the text at 1:07 was, "I just don't want to be one of you. I just don't want to be one of you." And that's got to be hard. That's, you know, I mean, I'm asleep. I'm going to work. I haven't seen this guy in 6 months. And he's sitting there in his house, wherever he's at, in a bar, drinking, drunk. And trust me, he cannot speak. So texting was good for him. That I'm not there to say, you know, you need to be this, you need to be that. I haven't talked to him. And I just don't want to be one of you. You know, I'm so grateful that I am one of us. And I know it, and I accept it, and I've found this way to be able to, you know, have these relationships in my life, that of which with the mothers to my kids, which I have all kinds of opinions. I could have taken 3 hours talking about them, because if you'd have told me when I was in my 20s that I was going to have a husband and two wives, I'd have told you you were full of shit, but that's really what it is. You know, these people live 2 miles from me, and they have something to say about every single thing that I do. You know, and I listen because I love my daughters, you know, and I have two daughters that, regardless of the dynamic of the relationship of, that I have with the mothers, good, bad, and different, and it's a great relationship. I've known one of the mothers since I was 19 years old, but it's trying, you know, as with anyone who wants to put their finger in what you're doing. You know, I don't have that with my husband, and so that's really kind of all I got. Thanks.